You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back. If you're rejoining us, my name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I have a co-host with me every Thursday that I get so very lucky. His name is Tom Paulswitz. He's a two-time congressional candidate, small business owner, Navy vet, and an all-around reasonable guy. He joins me today, and so do each and every one of you. It is time to talk about Trump's terror of tariffs, which are taxes. Everybody, can I get out any more T words? Not sure. Join our discussion this afternoon. We got to talk about all this. 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. The stock's nosediving in every stock market across the world today. Just want to correct something. His tariffs wiped out $2 trillion in value. $2 trillion, not four. $2 trillion in value today. Just today. Just in the S&P 500. Stocks have fallen more today than they have in a very, very long time. And they are now at their lowest, I believe, since June of 2020. That was, again, absolutely, excuse me, worst day on the S&P since June of 2020. The Dow Jones tumbling 1,600 points, just under 4%. NASDAQ down 6% for its biggest decline since March of 2020. Those are COVID times when, like, basically everything shut down.
So this was a result of someone being proactive versus reacting to a world crisis, which is, it is mind-numbing, right? But here's what Trump had to say today about it. He said, the operation is over. The patient lived and is healing. The prognosis is that the patient will be far stronger, bigger, better, and more resilient than ever before. He thinks that just by saying putting the tariffs into place, things have radically changed and everything is going to turn into America first. And it's mind-bogglingly stupid. And this is just the tip of what's going to happen.
It's just not going to happen. I mean, yesterday in the Rose Garden, Trump also was talking about Lee Iacocca and the fact that he talked to Lee Iacocca about tariffs. Well, if you don't know who that is,
Calvin, do you know who Lee Iacocca is?
Cal's going to be like, heck no, I don't know who Lee Iacocca is.
Yes, no idea. Yep.
Yeah, of course. He used to run one of our big three auto manufacturers, and he died in 2019. Right. By the way, in 2019, he was 94 when he died, and he had been sick for a long time. So what in the – Donald Trump doesn't know what he's talking about. Yeah. He just says things. That's – and the whole bit about the groceries, let's take a listen. I don't know what cut this is. It's one. We got one of the cuts today. It's this nonsense about the groceries that he starts dribbling on about. Cal, if you got it, let's take a listen here. I think it's cut 33.
Right. But likewise, an old-fashioned term that we use, groceries. I used it on the campaign. It's such an old-fashioned term, but a beautiful term, groceries. It sort of says a bag with different things in it.
What?
An old-fashioned term.
This is the stuff that we buy at a grocery store. You know, the place that you never go, Donald, because someone does it for you because you're a billionaire. I wanted to talk to people about what's really going on here. Because to me, that is what is most important. And I want to share with people a couple of facts. Here is a fact. Since 1981, $50 trillion of wealth has been transferred from the bottom 90% of Americans to the top 1%. $50 trillion. We have seen the largest, either by relative percentage or simply by gross number, absolute value, the largest transfer of wealth from working people to the ultra, ultra wealthy in our nation's history since 1981. By the way, that would be Reaganomics, everybody. That's modern conservatism.
Yep. What trickle down.
Yeah, it doesn't trickle down. It trickles up, which is what everybody actually feels and experiences. And what Donald Trump is doing with tariffs is putting in place the single largest massive transfer of the burden of funding government, of funding basic government functions from wealthy and the ultra wealthy and corporations, placing the overwhelming tax burden, the largest tax increase and tax increase shift to the middle class that our country has ever seen. So, Tom, let me ask you, what's really going on here?
Yeah, well, to me, the analogy just popped in my head. It's like there's this huge fire that's been smoldering and now it's burning, and Donald Trump is bringing a gasoline truck to the fire, and he's about to throw a ton of accelerant on this thing, and that inequality is going to just explode. And here's the thing. You mentioned Citizens United. You mentioned Elon Musk. The people that have the money have figured out a way to buy the system that's going to work for them. And you and I talked about this earlier, right? These tariffs are being put in place, but we have yet to really hear from any CEOs coming out and decrying what's happening and saying, this is absolutely wrong. This is going to destroy our economy, because one, they know personally they'll be able to weather the storm. And then two, they're much more likely to have a better company without regulations and everything else. But the question that's been in the back of my head,
more profitable with less regulation, more ability to pollute and to abuse and to leverage labor to enrich themselves.
But if there's no consumers to be able to buy things, how does that benefit these companies? It's insane to me that you're attacking the people that are your customers and trying to deprive them the ability of buying things from you because you're mad that there's too many regulations that are keeping you from making more money. It's insane to me. It doesn't make any sense, but it's happening over and over again. It's happening in academia. It's happening in healthcare. Right. It's happening in legal firms. Is people are capitulating, think that their income streams are not going to get impacted, when the reality is there's never enough for an autocrat. There's never enough for a fascist. If you give in once, you've given in for life, and you will always be giving. And so he'll be just making the rounds and extracting value wherever he can find it from people who are willing to bend the knee.
And to put that into sharp numerical relief, 75% of our economy is driven by consumer spending. Consumer spending is the middle class. Rich people don't consume, right? They've bought their 100th Rolls Royce. They do not need another one, right? What they do is hoard, right? They hoard money. They make more money from the money, and the money then purchases power, political influence, right? That's what's happening here. We've legalized corruption. Here's what I think the big picture is. And this, the point about where the hell are the CEOs, where the hell are the Hank Paulsons and the Jamie Dimons, the financial wizards that our country has seemingly bent a knee to for so many decades. They're not saying anything, one, because we have created a compensation system. And I mean that in all forms of compensation, the stock options that CEOs get, the way that compensation is meted out in Wall Street investment firms, that is fundamentally based on the most near-term return, right? It's based on a quarterly or annual return. We have failed to incentivize our largest businesses or our largest financial institutions to care about the medium and long term. When there are not good incentive structures, people will do the thing that serves them based on what that incentive is. Yes. Here, the incentive is tomorrow, not a decade. And the incentive is personal enrichment, not actual, real, true economic growth that benefits the middle class. So it's perfectly rational for CEOs to remain silent because, let's get rid of regulations that protect regular people who can't put in their own water filtration systems at the tune of $20,000 a pop.
Right.
They can't clean their own air. And Donald Trump scaring the it's the carrot and stick.
Right.
You know, benefits for those that bend the knee, and punishments for those that oppose.
Right. And if I somehow stay under the radar, they won't come after me. And are they sorely mistaken, right? Everybody who has any say in what's happening in this country, if you do not agree with Donald Trump and what he's doing, they will find you. They will force you to make a decision about where you stand. And so if you think that you don't have to at this point, you're sadly mistaken. And to me, there has to be some kind of coming together in the academia world, yes, in the legal world, in the business world to say enough is enough. And I have not seen that today after wiping out so much wealth, not just for the wealthy, but people at 401ks, everything else. There is no one standing up to say this is wrong, this is stupid, and it has to stop.
It has to stop. There was one person that said this is wrong and this is stupid, and I rarely agree with this guy, but I did yesterday. Let's take a listen, Cal, if you've got it. This is Rand Paul saying what everyone knows to be true in the simplest terms possible.
What's the rationale for getting behind this?
Well, one, we should not live under emergency rule. The Constitution said taxes are raised by Congress. Most specifically, taxes originate in the House and come to the Senate. So I'm against emergency rule. But on the tariffs in particular, on the idea of trade, trade is proportional to wealth. The last 70 years of international trade has been an exponential curve upwards, and the last 70 years of prosperity has been upwards also. We are richer because of trade with Canada, and so is Canada. Whenever you trade with somebody, when an individual buys somebody else's product, it's mutually beneficial or you wouldn't buy it. If the trade is voluntary, it's always beneficial. There is no Canada versus the U.S. The consumer wins when the price is the lowest price. Tariffs raise prices and they're a bad idea for the economy.
But what if this is...
Well, let's just recap here. Rand Paul...
Rand Paul.
Rand Paul, tariffs raise prices and they are a bad idea for the economy. Yep.
Yep.
And we're seeing those results today.
But that's the first Republican to come out and question this administration in a way that makes any sense.
Yes, clearly, unequivocally.
Now, unfortunately, it's Rand Paul who is a contrarian on everything, right?
On everything.
So I wish it was someone else.
I'll tell you what Mike Pence had to say about it. He opposes this tariff chaos.
Yeah.
And then we'll contrast that with the know-nothing Tommy Tuberville. We'll take your calls and text. How bad is it going to get for your family here in Wisconsin from the terror of Trump's tariff tax on the middle class? We discuss further coming up next right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join our discussion, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Got a fine guest co-host with me today, Tom Paulsiewicz, and each and every one of you. You're going to want to stay tuned through the whole show. We have got the chief economist for the Center on Taxation, Budget, and Policy coming up next at the bottom of this half hour. But we're talking about the big picture here. Why is Donald Trump and Howard Lutnick and his Treasury Secretary, why are all of these people going along with what they know are effectively taxes on the middle class? And there's two reasons. There's the micro and the macro. The micro is because businesses are going to do slightly better, some businesses, in the very near term. They might make more money. They like lower regulation, all those things. That's not going to drive long-term economic growth. It's not going to shore up the middle class. It's not going to bring manufacturing back to the country. Some rich people will get even richer in the very short term. But what is the bigger macro, longer-term question here? This is also about richer people gaining absolute control over the productive capacity of the United States. $50 trillion in wealth transferred from working people to the top 1% since 1981. We've seen the pairing of real wage increase with worker productivity. That's the social contract in economist terms. When real wages increase, we expect real wages to increase in some kind of proportion to the increase in worker productivity. They used to largely work in lockstep from 1973 to 2023. Excuse me, 1948 to 1973, got to start with that one. Worker productivity up 97%, and over that same time, real hourly wages for workers went up 91%. That's the social contract, right? In economist terms.
Right. Correlated.
Correct. From 1973.
And everybody made more money.
Everybody did well. And by the way, that's all post-New Deal and labor protections and the rise of unions.
Exactly.
And federal subsidies of home mortgages that were, you know, excluding Black families and communities. We could talk about that. But from 1973 to 2014, that's not even capturing the last decade plus of even slower wage growth. But just in from 1973 to 2014, worker productivity up 91%. Yeah. Real hourly wage growth, 9.2%.
Right.
The social contract has been breached. It hasn't been breached by working people in this country. It's been breached by the billionaire class. That's who stands to benefit the most.
Right. And if you correlate that to union membership, you will see the union membership slide during that same time frame. And somehow people have been convinced that unions are bad and companies are good. There's your graph. Yep. Totally fits. Unions are bad. Companies are good. Companies will take care of you. And the opposite has been true. Companies take care of themselves. They take care of their leadership. And that's why CEO pay has skyrocketed. And the federal minimum wage is stuck at $7.25.
Well, I have that statistic for you as well, Tom. The 1965 ratio of CEO to worker pay was 20. In 2023, it's 538. It's an obscenity. In approximately 1950, around 30% of the income, the wealth created in this country went to the top 10%. That number is now approaching 50%. In 1950, approximately 30% of workers were unionized. That number today is well under 10%. That's the relationship that you're talking about.
Yes.
The wealth going to the top 10% goes up as union membership goes down, as labor protections are weakened, as we degrade and erode a minimum wage. All of those things happening. Let's take a call. We got Phil from Minneapolis on the line. Phil, welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. Say hello to Tom. What's your thought this afternoon?
Hi, Tom and Maggie. Yeah, when you took your commercial break, when you came back with money, 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 that cracked me up.
What it's about.
I always think of the Republican Party since Reagan as the reverse Robin Hood Party, because they steal from the poor to give to the rich. And I lived in California for a couple of years in the late 60s. And when I lived there, there was this very interesting poster that was available at various small merchandising outlets in California. It was a photograph of Ronald Reagan in one of those nice buckskin fringe jackets with a six gun out, pointing to one side of the poster, and the balloon over his head said, "Thanks for the vote, suckers."
Yep.
Phil from Minneapolis, thanks so much for listening and calling. He's hit it on the head. This is, again, we have witnessed over the last, let's say, 40 years, the greatest wealth absorption away from the middle class and to the wealthiest top 10%. What Donald Trump is trying to accomplish here is the greatest tax burden shift, again, away from the billionaires, taking tax, reducing taxes on billionaires and the world's largest, most consistently profitable corporations, and shifting all of that burden onto you.
Tariffs are regressive. The tax is going to be on the consumer. You know, and here's the thing is the world GDP pie has grown substantially in that same time period. It's not only like the piece of the pie has not just gotten bigger, the whole pie has gotten bigger, and it hasn't been enough for wealthy people to take a bigger share of a bigger, the same share of a bigger pie. They had to have more. And yeah. I'm wondering where it stops, right? This, if we were
say
talking
that again,
about,
Tom, it wasn't enough
it
for
wasn't
wealthier
enough.
People to take the same huge chunk of a bigger right. pie that would have enriched the middle class. They want the bigger, they want the vast majority of all of the wealth of that ever increasing wealth pie.
Right. And if money was food, these people would be under a doctor's care because they'd be accused of hoarding because there's not enough food for other people then when there's more than enough food to feed everyone. And for some reason, we don't think about things that way. And it comes down to an issue of fairness. And right now, you have the administration right now who is consistently voted for the wealthy and are willing to take it out of the hides of the average person.
That is what's going on. We're going to discuss this more coming up next with a fantastic expert guest. Thank goodness, going to make all of us smarter. We've got Benga Adjelore, the chief economist at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, coming up next. Just to make sure we're all clear here, 900 jobs have been cut by an automaker just today because of Donald Trump's tariffs. So bringing back manufacturing and jobs, I think not. We're going to discuss the impact of tariffs on farmers right here in Wisconsin with our special guest coming up next. You're not going to want to go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're talking about the tariff of Donald Trump's tariffs. It's a mouthful, and they are seemingly blunderbuss all over the place. He's tariffing penguins, but not Vladimir Putin. Here to help us make sense of all of it is Dr. Benga Adjelore. He is the chief economist at the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities. He was formerly a senior advisor in the Office of the Undersecretary for Rural Development at the United States Department of Agriculture. He was an economist also at the Center for American Progress and a tenured associate professor of economics at the University of Toledo. He knows lots about this. We're so happy to have him joining us. Dr. Adjelore, welcome. Thank you for making time. Tell folks, how unusual is this sort of approach to tariffs, these wide-ranging across-the-board tariffs on pretty much every trading partner of the United States in the modern era of tariff policy?
Well, first, thank you for inviting me on. It's a pleasure to be here. And you talk about how extreme this is. I'm glad you brought up taxing penguins. That, yes. You know, I've never seen that in tariffs before. But I think the biggest thing is that it's such a broad sense, a broad stretch of taxation of the number of countries, the list, you know, countries that I've never even heard of, their territories. And the question, two questions come up is, one is the why, you know, what are the goal of tariffs? So every administration has done tariffs before. A lot of times you look at, but these are very targeted and there's a specific goal towards them. So sometimes you say, okay, well, this country is engaging in unfair trade policy. We're going to put a tariff on this specific good to make it more competitive with our domestic industry. And then once they stop engaging that negative behavior, we could pull the tariffs off. Clear goal, clear plan, and they execute it. This, they're talking about, well, this is gonna bring in $6 trillion. And that's gonna be a lot of revenue that's gonna pay for the wealthy tax cut that they wanna try to push through. But then they say the tariffs are to limit the flow of fentanyl across the border. So if they're successful in limiting the flow of fentanyl across the border, then they pull the tariffs off, but you're not raising that $6 trillion, right? So now you have these goals that are in conflict and it doesn't even make sense. And then the other thing I have is you look at the numbers. So I think it was for, you know, China, it's up to, you know, 60%. For Japan, it's like 46%. And it's like, well, how did you do the math? And so they came up with this formula, and the formula, they threw in some Greek letters to make it look complicated. And, you know, I know Maggie done a lot of econ with math. So you can recognize that the formula, it turns out that it doesn't even make sense. It's just basically a trade deficit besides divided by imports. And even the people, the academics who actually created the formula, the assumptions that they made, they were saying, okay, this is our math, but they did it wrong. Like, we would actually use something different, which would make these tariff numbers smaller. And so it's just, there's a lot of confusion, and it's a lot of confusion just in terms of the math, in terms of the numbers, in terms of the countries. And it's just, it's very difficult to understand the why.
Yeah, the why here matters a lot, right? And I want to reemphasize the point that you just made, Dr. Agilore, for those that are listening and are saying, well, this is going to help bring back U.S. manufacturing, and or it's going to stop the flow of fentanyl, or, oh, yes, this is going to be the new source of revenue and it's going to make our country richer. These objectives do not work together. You can't do all of those things. And to the extent that, and I've talked to some of my friends that work in the auto industry, and a couple of them are conservative Trump supporters. They're real excited there's going to be more auto manufacturing jobs. And I keep telling them that's not how this works. For sectors and industries that offshored some of their manufacturing, to return that to the United States is a multi-year process at best. And a business is not going to make $100 million investments to return manufacturing to the U.S. in 3 to 5 years, which is how long at minimum it would take, if this is simply a negotiating tactic, if this is simply a temporary thing, if Donald Trump is in fact an unreliable actor, which he has proven to be again and again. This just doesn't wash out, as well as, and I looked at the calculation, Dr. Agilore, and I went, oh yeah, that's a bunch of garbage. And by the way, a freshman in college that studies macroeconomics can write the formula for trade deficit calculation better than those fools just did. It doesn't make any sense. But let's focus on farmers in places like the state of Wisconsin. How disastrous is this going to be in the agricultural sectors here in the United States?
It is something that I'm really concerned about. And a lot of it is, it's not the tariffs that we are placing on these countries. What I'm worried about is what's going to be the retaliatory tariffs. Right. And so, you know, over the last 2 months, we've been putting tariffs on China, Canada, Mexico, and, you know, they put some retaliatory tariffs on some of our goods. Now, more broadly, a lot of it's been the oilseed and grain exports that's hurt other places in the Midwest. But now with these tariffs, they're going to do retaliatory. So I'm looking at what's going to happen with dairy exports. I'm looking at, you know, you think about some of the biggest export economy for Wisconsin farmers is China, Korea, and Japan. And just last week they announced, now these are countries that don't get along well, but they announced that they're going to be a joint venture to try to combat these tariffs that the Trump has placed on it. And so now I'm thinking about what's going to happen to the farmers, to their export markets. And I think back to the first term where he put tariffs on China and they had retaliatory tariffs that hit farmers especially soybean farmers, saw a loss of 70% of their production that they're still being hurt by. And so that's what I'm looking for, not what happened yesterday, but what's going to happen in the next couple of days, next week with the other countries. And there's a whole laundry list of countries. What are they going to do in response?
Yeah. And I also feel like this is one of those weird areas where we're trying to use logic in an illogical area. Right. That what's happening right now doesn't make any sense, but we're still trying to use logic in regards to what countries will do when they come back and maybe place more tariffs on us. It feels like Donald Trump is looking for these countries to come to him and make an offer. You know, so I read a quote that said everybody woke up this morning with a horse head in their bed and are trying to figure out who sent it and what the next step is. But are there other things countries could offer besides raising their own tariffs? At this point, that would somehow play into the U.S. economy? And that's a serious question. Is there something else that we could be seeing happening that would be the opposite of them raising their own tariffs?
I think a lot of it is just they're going to find other places to get their goods and services from. Because one of the other things is our big export is services. Right. And that's where we actually have a trade surplus in services. And these countries are going to go to other places. They're going to try to find other countries to deal with and work with. And again, this is, you know, there's a lot of worries that come up, but one of them is they're going to find other ways of doing business that when we pull these tariffs off, we're not going to go back to where we were before. They're going to continue doing business with these other countries because we've now developed this reputation of being unreliable. And to, you know, Maggie's point before about the uncertainty, business uncertainty, uncertainty for consumers, uncertainty for investors, foreign and domestic. And so I'm worried about the long-term impact, how countries are going to be changing their behavior and continue to change their behavior in a way that's going to harm our producers.
Let me ask you a related question. When we start looking at the number, the specific numbers, Vietnam, which has been a very reliable trading partner with the United States for a very long time, a lot of consumer goods are manufactured in Vietnam. In fact, during Trump's first administration, he said to manufacturers that U.S.-based companies that had manufacturing in China, take it out of China, put it in Vietnam. He just slapped a 46% tariff on goods being imported from Vietnam. We know that 60% of auto parts are imported, even if the final assembly is happening here. What is the possible off-ramp? Is it just going to be more chaos? Or is the off-ramp the most likely result, as you were saying, Dr. Edgelori, that countries and businesses will move their businesses elsewhere? That this over, even if Donald Trump starts to pull some of these tariffs back in the near term, in the next quarter, that the damage will have been done and it will be irreversible to a certain extent, and it will help bring about the further decline of American primacy in economic matters, especially world economic matters. How do we get out of this? Is there a way to exit without maximal pain? Or is this going to be, frankly, irreversible in terms of its negative impacts in many ways?
That's a very good question. It's something that I've been struggling with, because even if, let's say, tomorrow he says, you know, he looks at the stock market, sees the big drop and says, okay, let me pull back. These countries are going to look at that and say, okay, he did that today. But what's going to happen in May, in June, in 2026? Like, can we trust this administration to be able to not go back and forth? I mean, we even saw this a couple weeks ago with the steel tariffs on Canada. You know, he said 25% tariffs on steel. And then in the morning, he said, no, I'm going to do 50%. And then 4 hours later, or 5 hours later, he brought it back down to 25%, where it's like, even within the day, you don't know. And the problem is, you know, we can, you know, laugh and joke about this, but there are businesses who deal with steel, who have inputs that with steel, and they have to make decisions, you know, not just for tomorrow, next week, but 6 months, a year from now. You think about talking about the farmers, some of the things that they have to figure out and figure out their bottom line, making plans. And you can't make plans where it's like, I don't know if this is going to cost me 25% more or 50% more. You have other producers who are sitting there thinking to themselves, okay, I'm going to have to, if it's 25%, I can eat the cost and help out my consumers. At 50%, I can't. But they don't know if it's 25% or 50%. Right. They have to, they can't wait to make these decisions. They need certainty. They need to understand if it's going to be more. Because even if you are a fan of tariffs, even if you want these things, you still need to be able to plan. And this is the problem with this, the way the tariff has been implemented, is that it's been very haphazard and chaotic.
Chaotic is the word. So in your estimation, Dr. Edgelori, why is this happening? Like, what's the end game when it comes to doing tariffs this way with this unpredictability in your mind?
I don't have an answer for that. I just think that this is a tool that the president's able to use without congressional blessing, even though Congress is the one who's supposed to be administering tariffs, but it's a tool for him to use to be able to, like he had the event yesterday, Make America Wealthy Again. It was a 1 hour event where he could be celebrated and he could talk about this and make this big announcement. And I think this is just kind of a tool that he's able to do that with.
Let's talk again, Dr. Edgelori. And folks, if you're joining us, we've got Dr. Benga Edgelori from the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities. are tariffs regressive? Are they effectively a sales tax on consumers? Do they, in effect, cost the poorest among us, the folks that are struggling the most? Do they have the most dire impacts the lower your income?
That's 100% correct. So you look at the tariffs, you look at the kind of goods, like some of the biggest tariffs are going to be, that raises the price for goods. So you're looking at clothing, you're looking at apparel, you're looking at food at, you know, grocery stores. And so the other thing is, it's a tariff on all kinds of goods, especially lower priced goods. And you think about the people who purchase those goods, and you think about people who are higher income, and they have the option of buying different goods, and they have the option of buying, you know, higher end quality stuff and purchase those things. Where you look at, you know, we saw this with egg prices, that egg prices went up, and the egg prices for like specialty eggs or, you know, cage-free eggs, that the differential was about the same. Mm-hmm. And so it ends up being about the same price. And so this is gonna hit low-income people the hardest. And that's the other thing about these tariffs is that, you know, you think about tax cuts primarily benefit the wealthy, and that, you know, low-income people don't benefit. Tariffs hit everybody. Now, the only difference is, who is it hit harder? It hits harder the lower income people.
Folks, we're going to have to leave it there for today. We're going to come back on the other side with some final thoughts. Thank you to Dr. Benga Adjelori, making us all smarter. I would love to have you back again soon. These aren't going away fast. Thank you for your time, sir, and your work on this very important topic. Folks, we'll be back in just a moment here on the Maggie Dawn Show with Tom Paulswitz. Our final thoughts and your final calls and texts, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Keep it locked right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. A big thanks to Dr. Benga Adjelori, the Chief Economist at the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities, helping us all get a little bit smarter about the terror of Donald Trump's tariff taxes on the middle class. I got a couple of great questions on my phone from friends and loved ones and on the text line here at Civic Media asking this question, which is, Donald Trump keeps citing all kinds of tariff numbers from other nations. And is that accurate? In short, no, he's lying. When you look at the tariff policies of other countries, they're very complex. They are scalpels. They're targeted. They have limited duration. They are for a specific purpose because they have suspected, frankly, certain anti-competitive actions. It is basically almost every single thing that he has said yesterday and continues to say about some of our most reliable trading partners for the greater majority of the last 50 plus years in this country is simply a bunch of lies. Do not believe him. Take the 2 minutes to Google whatever the fact is. Dig a little deeper. Look for independent sources. Don't just read what's coming out of the Cato Institute or the American Enterprise Institute, because economists can manipulate numbers. I know that because I am one. You got to get to the good academics, the good objective economists and analyses there. Again, I'll do a little digging on some of these and address them maybe tomorrow or next week. But in short form, I just wanted to address that concern from people. Basically, Donald Trump is lying through his teeth almost every day when he says other countries are like that we're paying for. That is not how trade works. Cal, do you have Rand Paul explaining it? I rarely agree with Rand, but he explained it pretty well. Let's take another listen. Senator Rand Paul explaining the basics of how trade works.
What's the rationale for getting behind this?
Well, one, we should not live under emergency rule. The Constitution said taxes are raised by Congress. Most specifically, taxes originate in the House and come to the Senate. So I'm against emergency rule. But on the tariffs in particular, on the idea of trade, trade is proportional to wealth. The last 70 years of international trade has been an exponential curve upwards, and the last 70 years of prosperity has been upwards also. We are richer because of trade with Canada, and so is Canada. Whenever you trade with somebody, when an individual buys somebody else's product, it's mutually beneficial or you wouldn't buy it. If the trade is voluntary, it's always beneficial. There is no Canada versus the U.S. The consumer wins when the price is the lowest price. Tariffs raise prices and they're a bad idea for the economy.
And I also just want to say this as an economist, a trade deficit is often a good thing if you are a very wealthy country with high relative incomes. Now, our wages, our minimum wage ain't a minimum wage, it ain't a living wage. But on a very aggregate level, we have relatively higher incomes than a lot of the nations where we make very cheap, affordable consumer goods. We therefore have a trade deficit because American buyers want to buy the cheaper chicken. We want the cheaper products, right? So that's a trade deficits. When you talk to knowledgeable economists, they'll say, there's nothing wrong with having a trade deficit. In fact, that may be an indicator of a very positive and strong economy.
It also allows countries to narrow in and create niches of their expertise, right? I think I read it best, though, that somebody posted and said, you don't have a trade deficit with your dentist, right?
Right. What it's are just, you even talking about?
Right, it's not possible. But here's the thing. If this was really about bringing jobs back, wouldn't we be raising taxes on corporations and then ask it, then maybe lowering them if they decided to move industries,
to move jobs back here? We use tax policy to accomplish what he's trying to,
exactly,
which would require him to go through Congress. By the way, the piece of legislation that Rand Paul was being questioned about is a resolution that the Senate has introduced. It passed it 51-48 to end the presidential emergency declaration that has permitted tariffs in violation of the very trade agreement that Donald Trump negotiated with Canada and Mexico in his first term. And by the way, all of that business about fentanyl, that's garbage. The vast majority of fentanyl that is coming in from China is coming in very small packages with value under $1,000. Oh, in fact, under $800, which is a tariff exception to Donald Trump's tariff policy with China. And the fentanyl that's coming in from Canada and Mexico, yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's not being brought in by migrants. It's being brought in by good old-fashioned U.S. citizens in automobiles, because you don't need a whole heck of a lot of it, and you don't need a big truck full of it in order to make a ton of money.
And we just had a PhD in economics on here who could not answer the question, why is the president what's the point? He has no idea. And if an economist has no idea why it's happening, then the rest of us are going to fail miserably to understand it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to cue in one of our listeners, Chris out of Madison. Thank you, Chris. Said, hey, it would have been nice if we had some warning that Trump was going to do this and that it would be bad. And Tom, you and I talked very briefly about this. I'm just going to say this. For every single MAGA voter, and I know that there's a lot of you out there who thought, I'll wait to buy my gas or groceries until January 21st because they're going to get cheaper. Did it take the 5 seconds it takes to Google how tariffs are paid and levied? Right. This was all available, known, or knowable. People that are acting shocked about this, you were fooling yourself. You were the mark in Donald Trump's long con on the middle class. We're going to have to leave it there, everybody. You got Dom Salvia coming up next. A big thank you to Tom Paulswitz and each and every one of you for tuning in. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together against regressive tariffs.
Yes.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.